Yo. Yo. Word. Adjective. Pronoun. Adverb. Run on and on, where my gerunds at? Parenthetical. Shit, motherfucker, ass tits, cunt, cock, motherfucker, shit, ass tits, motherfucker, shit, come on.
And welcome to I'm Trying to Think episode 47. That is the great Reggie Watts with Fuck Shit Stack. Good for him, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I've been thinking that maybe, Dave, maybe we should start the show off with a warning. Some material may not be appropriate for all audiences.
That seems about true of everything, though. I mean, that seems to be true about all, you know, media, all ideas, the world.
So maybe we should start with the warning. All material may not be appropriate for all audiences.
Yeah, that sounds fair.
Welcome to I'm Trying to Think. This is episode 47. I'm Chuck Werner. With me, as always, is Dave Stern. Say hello, Dave.
Hello.
I'm Trying to Think is a podcast sponsored by the Foundation Institute. Find them online, foundation-institute.org. You could visit us online at imtryingtothink.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com. /I'm Trying to Think. I've never tried that. Maybe we should set that up. I don't know. That might work. Twitter.com/I'm Trying to Think. And email us at contact@I'm Trying to Think.com. So yeah, Dave, I figured, you know, let's start off with a little bit of material that people might find inappropriate.
Just right off the bat, leading with that?
Yeah, well, you know.
All our cards up front?
Yeah, I have a big question, you know. Big question, Dave.
We like the big questions.
What material is appropriate for I'm Trying to Think? And more to the point, when people listen to a podcast, what do they expect? Do they expect that we're going to go blue? Or do they think, eh, they won't go blue? Because, I mean, we can go blue. We have no... There's no oversight.
I think we do have the explicit tag in iTunes. So, that's a start.
Explicit tag in iTunes, Dave.
So, I think people are expecting that we go blue. Because we're given that right up front. It's in red letters and everything. It's in red letters. It's in a box.
Red letters in a box. Do you think... I don't use iTunes... do you think that that's limiting our audience?
I don't think that's limiting our audience, no.
Dave, what would you say is the number one limit to our audience?
Probably the things we talk about or the manner in which we talk about them. I'm not decided yet.
So you're saying, like, the show itself?
Yes, essentially. I feel like the main thing that limits our audience is our show.
All right, so what show could we do that would be unlimited audience? Let's start there, and we'll work our way down to where we are, and we'll see if there's a place in the middle where we can kind of be happy.
Okay, well, if you're looking to make mass market popular entertainment, I think...
And I am.
Of course. You just want to look at step one where we've gone wrong. Look at, you know, successful mass market entertainment, and look at the title of our podcast, I'm Trying to Think.
Okay.
There's already a disconnect there.
Are you saying uncertainty?
No,
because other shows that follow phraseology that are very popular, for instance, How I Met Your Mother, right? That's a phrase that is also a title. And our show is a phrase that is also a title. But in their show, that phrase, How I Met Your Mother, definitive. This is How I Met Your Mother. Although, I haven't seen a lot of the show, but apparently they don't ever actually get to the part where you actually find out.
No, it's basically like a long, rambling story that, you know, doesn't go anywhere, but is entertaining in the meantime, I think is the general idea.
Another one is Shit My Dad Says, which isn't popular, probably, but...
I don't know, is it? Is it one of those... It's on CBS, so that makes me suspicious, because I have no way to gauge the popularity of anything on CBS.
Because you're under the age of 55?
Yeah, it's possible that everyone watches Shit My Dad Says. Regardless, I know, especially all those 2.5 Men people, they got nowhere left to go now.
They got repeats. The title of that show is very definitive as well. Shit My Dad Says. There's no question. And How I Met Your Mother, if it were called How Did I Meet Your Mother, nobody would watch it. So maybe we should change the name of the show to We Thought. Or
you see,
I Thought.
I don't,
or This Is What I Think.
I think we'd still have some problems, though, because you keyed on this definitiveness thing. To me, the problem, the gap that separates, you know, by show title alone, what we do from popular entertainment, I was mostly keying in on the word think and everything that represents. I think that might be a problem for us. I think thought, like the idea of conscious, deliberate thought, might be like an anchor on our, you know, just tied around our ankle, weighing us down. Like,
hello out there, and welcome to episode 47 of This Is What I Think. I am Chuck Werner. With me is Dave Stern, which you should have known already, because it is always true. Do you think that was a little harsh?
Yes, that was very harsh.
Okay. Yeah. So you're saying the
You're freaking things out, red levels. There's a lot of problems going on there. All right,
so hold on. Let me reverse a little, okay? I'm going to start over again. Ready?
Yeah.
Hello out there, and welcome to episode 47 of This Is What My Gut Tells Me. I'm Chuck Werner, I'm pretty sure. And everything that I've experienced in life tells me that that's Dave Stern.
Yeah, that's a pretty good, I think that's a better start. You're not sort of,
all right, I'm gonna
you're
my
not
gut.
Forcing people to worry that, you know, this is going to be something they're going to have to pay attention to. It's going to be confusing them with ideas, possibly even ideas they don't already know.
All right, hold on.
So I think it's better.
I'm going with my gut a little more, too. One time when I drove a certain way to work, there was traffic. So I don't drive that way anymore.
Man, I can relate to that.
Yeah, that's what my gut tells me. It says, use that singular experience to extrapolate all future experiences.
That sounds plausible.
Yeah, exactly. One time when I was wearing my Steelers jersey, they lost. So it's bad luck. So I put it in the closet. And then they won the next week. So that's where I put all my bad clothing that makes the Steelers lose. That's what my gut tells me.
There you go.
Yeah.
See, now we're connecting to the common man. And there's more of the common man than, like, there is of the, I don't know, 40-odd people who already like us.
I'm not a racist.
So this expands our reach.
I'm not a racist, but one time I was in an IHOP, and it was full of black people. So black people love IHOP. That is what my gut tells me.
Pancakes.
And this has been episode 47 of That Is What My Gut Tells Me.
Okay, I think that's a pilot we can chop around.
Yeah, I mean,
that could work.
It's, you know, it speaks more to the common man, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
So aside from the thinking, what else is keeping us from mass market success? Like, I mean, do we need a, should there be more cleavage on the show?
Probably.
I don't know how we're going to do that.
Yeah, that's hard
it's
in audio.
Only.
Yeah. Sex appeal in sort of, in pure audio is a tough sell. It's a tough road to hoe.
We could start the show off like, close your eyes and imagine cleavage. This is episode 47 of Imagining Cleavage. I'm your host, Chuck Werner, and with me as always is Dave Stern. Dave, are you imagining cleavage?
Of course.
That's what we're here for. Cleavage. Dave, is your cleavage couched in a red sweater or perhaps a V-neck top?
Yes.
Or a V-neck sweater that is red. I think you use red because it against the color of skin, shows, you know, it makes the skin stand out more so the cleavage seems more pronounced. Black would also do a good job of this. This has been episode 47 of Imagining Cleavage. So maybe if we went with, like, your gut imagining cleavage.
That seems off-putting to me.
Okay.
I don't know, just that sounds gross. That sounds gross.
Yeah, it's not, your gut probably doesn't have a lot of taste.
No, and also, I mean, you're just talking about that
cleavage.
Like, eventually, people are just going to be imagining guts. Let's be honest.
Like
people
are going
to get confused.
Like blood and guts.
Blood guts, you know, big fat belly guts. Either way, it's not. Either way, it's no good.
Because your gut is something you can really depend on, but guts are gross. Unless you have guts, and it's better to have guts on the inside than on the outside.
And if I remember correctly, if you have guts, you have a pretty good chance of climbing the aggro crag. Yes.
Oh, my God, Dave. I can't believe we just said aggro crag at the same time.
It's like that's a shame jinx.
It's a shame jinx. We should never tell anybody about that. No one is going to listen to this, so they won't know that way.
That's true. I mean, I don't know. If you checked recently, it may have been a fluke. I think we've lost a fan.
Oh, that would hurt my heart, Dave. Don't make me look. Oh,
you can check
what
later.
What are you going to do? Anyways, what else is keeping us from mass market appeal, aside from the Guts reference that we just made? We just said Aggro Crag, so that's pretty much...
No, I think that's
I think
actually...
that answered my question.
That's good, actually, I think.
If Family Guy said Aggro Crag, everybody would love it.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
What people actually like now is a thing from their childhood, and then you say it. So what we should do is maybe just go further in that direction... And just have our show, I'm trying to say a thing you remember.
Or, I'm trying to He-Man Transformers Rainbow Bright.
Strawberry Shortcake.
Yeah. That would give us dozens more listeners.
Yeah.
Dave.
If there's one thing people like, it's things they already liked once.
I'm only going to break your heart. But it is true. We have 39 fans now, whereas we had 40. Previous week. So our Facebook fanage has gone down.
Yep.
People are bailing like rats on a sinking ship.
Hopefully they can go find greener pastures in which to transmit the plague.
Plague. So yeah, I can understand why we maybe don't have mass market appeal. We aren't
Thundercats.
Talking from the Guts. We're not talking about things that people remember from their childhood.
Slinkies.
Popples.
Pop-o-matic trouble.
Ooh. And we're not, there's no cleavage, there's no sex appeal. Yeah, I don't know where we go from there.
Sorry.
You and me both. All right, let's move on to the next topic, Dave. And that topic is this. I don't remember anything about Aristotle.
Do you not?
No,
nothing?
We were just talking about Plato and Socrates last week, right?
So now we got to start moving down Greek philosophy?
In the last episode.
One
crucial Greek at a time. And I do not remember anything about Aristotle. I realized this today because guess what? Visiting the parents again.
They were up to it. Mom's up to Aristotle?
With questions about Aristotle. And I'm like, you know what? Do not remember a single thing about Aristotle. You and I had a professor, Dave, who loved Socrates. Spent a lot of time talking about Socrates and Plato and just really focused on those two guys. Not so much on Aristotle.
You see, this is where I could actually probably give you a hand because...
Good.
In terms of other classes...
I kind of remember the Nicomachean Ethics.
The annoying slash impressive thing about Aristotle... is that he wrote something, you know, pretty interesting and foundational about everything. So you kind of have to dig into which Aristotle you're talking about. Because, you know...
I'm talking about the Greek one. He was a student of Plato.
Yeah, Aristotle Onassis.
Sure.
A lot of money.
Is he Jackie Onassis' dad?
No, husband. Second husband.
Oh, so after the bang.
Second husband or...
Once removed.
Dad. I don't remember. I'm not a Camelot guy.
Moving
I don't
on.
Know the history there. But anyhow, Aristotle.
Aristotle.
Yeah, Aristotle J. Aristotle.
Okay.
Full name. Look it up. Don't look it up. It isn't true. But
if you look it up on Wikipedia in the next 5 minutes, it will be true.
Aristotle, founder of the Lyceum. That's a thing. He made a lot of different contributions. You know, there is, again, the Nicomachean Ethics where, you know, if you want the, you know... pithy in a sentence, inadequate summary version, because I remember slightly more than you. It would basically be, you know, means, you know, basically virtue, you know, there's virtue in means, like as in, you know, middle, like
yeah,
you know,
the yeah. middle ground, yes.
Middle ground of things.
So one thing I remember about the Nicomachean Ethics, and it's vitally important to the understanding of the text, of course, is that it's named for Aristotle's son, Nicomachus.
Correct.
Which is a good name. I think I might name my own child Nicomachus Werner.
Oh, that's good. And people just call him a normal name, too. So it's not going to, like,
Nico.
Haunt him.
Nico.
Nico. Bella. Nick.
Yeah. That works. Nicky. Nicorama. Nicomachia.
I don't think there's been a person in the world who was called Nicorama.
There should be. I have a friend named Nick. I'm calling him Nickorama from now on. Moving on. So, yeah, I don't remember anything about Aristotle.
You got that?
Like, he did some scientist stuff. I kind of remember that,
you
right?
Got his metaphysics, where a lot of that was... Basically, he was talking about sort of essential qualities of objects, but he disagreed with Plato in that his essential qualities were essentially... Blah, that was a stupid way to phrase that. His essential qualities, I believe, were in objects themselves, as opposed to the sort of Platonic thing where they were, you know, in the realm of forms.
Dave, which do you think is true? Realm of forms or in the object themselves?
Well, this is where, from the modern standpoint, you look sort of beyond that particular duality and you're like, what is an essential quality exactly? You might argue that it's a linguistic signifier, etc., etc. Like, it seems like a dichotomy that, you know, I believe Aristotle is closer in that, you know, I'm not a dualist, but...
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure if essential qualities are a thing.
I think in this, I am a dualist, but hear me out. Hear me out. First of all, I like pistols at 40 paces, which makes me an excellent dualist. But if you take out that E and put in a N-A, then I think there is a duality, but it exists in the mind and then in the universe itself. Like, there is an objective universe wherein there is a thing, but that thing has no definition. There's no chair thing, objectively. But in the mind, there is a chair thing. But that chair thing is represented in two ways, by matter and then by a concept, a transcendental concept. So there is a duality, but it's not the spirit versus matter duality, necessarily. I mean, unless you want to typify spirit as transcendental conceptual ideas that have no material existence. Do you want to do that, Dave?
Not particularly, honestly.
Well, fine.
So we won't.
Fine, fine, fine.
So yeah, anyhow, Aristotle had his, you know, detailed metaphysics, which I think he gave, like, you know, unlike Plato, who just has, you know, the forms and, you know, it's big and it's this big idea. Like, he really kind of broke it down. Like, he had these, all these different categories of, you know, these are the essential qualities objects can have. You know, it was like, I don't know, extension and... That's actually the only one I can remember off the top of my head.
Extension and...
It's been a while since I did...
Apprehension and implantation. I don't know, I'm just using shins.
You're literally just saying words.
Shin words. Shin words, Dave.
Okay, yeah, that is actually one of the things that all objects had. It was one of the essential qualities was shins.
Shin, yeah.
All objects need shins.
Well, shin, like T-I-O-N, you know, shin. Those are important. The shins.
Yeah.
I should write a book about the shins. Also, yeah, kind of take a break here. I want to put this plug into every show now from here on out, Dave.
All right.
All right. Dave, you and I have a lot of friends who work for Google. And I have told these friends on several occasions, and now I'm putting it out there to the internet. Dave Google. Dear Google, before I get started. Dear Google.
Dave Google.
I started to address you, then I started to address Google, and I realized I should stop and clarify. Dear Google, you've got all these wonderful products, and I know you've kind of taken over the maps world, the email world, the web search world, the facial recognition by my phone world, and soon you will take over the car driving world, and eventually the worlds of, you know, food tablets. Soylent Green is fine. I don't have a problem with that. You know, once you take over, it's going to come to the point where you're going to have to provide the world, now that you've provided them with internet document editors and email and chat, you're going to have to provide the world with the morality. I just want to say that Dave Stern and Chuck Werner are here to provide you with the outline and management of your Google Morality Project. We are on top of it. We both are experts in the field, and I am ready to teach you, Google, how morality can be computerized into your little searchy machines.
Yeah, I will say that is a hole in, you know, all of the engines right now, because I will say I've typed it into the Google. You know, it comes fast. It's got the instant search. I've typed it into Bing. I've asked Jeeves, but no one can tell me how to live a good life.
Yeah, and Dave and I can. But, you know, it'll take a lot of technology and a little bit of computer power. That's all I'm saying.
And a little bit of elbow grease.
A little bit of elbow grease. Dave, elbow grease. Is it grease that you grease your elbows with? Or is it the grease produced by your elbows?
I don't think it's either, but I think it's closer to the
first. It is from those who can produce the elbow grease to those who require the elbow grease. That's all I'm saying.
That sounds a little bit socialist.
So, like, one guy, he's making the elbow grease, and he's putting it in a bucket, and then he hands it off and to a, probably some sort of Soviet who decides a committee that decides how the elbow grease is redistributed. And then the elbow grease is sent to the needy, who then grease their elbows. Yeah, so everybody's elbows are greasy.
From each according to his grease.
Yes.
To each according to his dry, flaky skin.
Dry,
yes.
Flaky elbows, yes. I have dry, flaky elbows. So I am in need of those who are greasy. And they don't know the gift that they're given, you know? It's a charity that needs to be formed.
I'm not happy with greasy.
Google, we are ready.
I'm not at all happy with greasy.
We are ready to do Google Morality. You contact us. You know where we are. All right, moving on.
Also, you can say 20% project.
20%.
Because, we get that one day a week, once we're working at Google. They've got us crunching on the morality thing as the main job. You get the 20% project. Google Grease.
Google Afterlife. I think that's what we work on.
No, I'm thinking because Google could get that grease from where it needs to go to where it,
Yeah, I mean, that could be something. I think that's Amazon. You want to call Amazon? They've got a real good
physical product distribution network
system network. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're on top of that. So, Amazon, I don't really know anything about elbow grease, but if you'll pay me to talk about it,
we're willing to learn.
Yeah, we're willing to learn. Really, just anybody who wants to offer us money for us doing. Like jack squat, we're on top of that. If you need us to promote a product or demote a product, we're there.
That seems like something that's underutilized in advertising.
Demotion.
Product demotion. And when I say, like just taking out big ads in magazines, clearly politics has figured this out. Just real scummy, shitty, negative campaigning.
Negative campaigning, yeah.
But, I don't hear a lot of that in, podcasts. So I think there might be an opportunity here. Like, you pay us and we will just have these little spot reads. We'll throw them, in the middle of a segment.
Yeah.
Where we'll just shit on a product that's competing with yours.
We will pan your competitor. So if there are any plays out there who are musical plays who are intimidated by Spider-Man, bring the dark down to its knees and punch it in the dick. We will talk shit on it. Wait, what is it? Escape the dark, bring back the night, welcome the Satan. I don't remember.
Spider-Man take back the night. I believe he just clubs rapists.
That's fine with me.
Yeah, it's positive.
Yeah, I mean, those aren't nice people.
Yeah, they're bad. They deserve to get hit by Spider-Man.
If it's that, or, what other shit do we hate? We don't really hate Spider-Man let in the light, but we're... Spider-Man touched by an angel. You said that we should be talking about it in the last episode, so I thought I'd bring it up this episode. And then
next it back,
40.
Keep it back in the cultural discourse.
And eventually people will be like, I don't even remember what that is. But we're still talking about it.
Indeed.
All right, good for us. I still don't really know anything about Aristotle. That's fine. But I do know that I'm going to name my first son Nicomachus. Nicomachusin.
Let me just put a bow on this segment. Give you some of the rest of the Aristotle stuff.
Bow it up.
Okay. Things Aristotle did. He invented the classification system that, with, obviously heavy modifications after we learned science, we still use today for biological classification. He invented that shit.
Job.
Kingdom, phylum, species.
It's vaguely useful.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was him.
Unfortunately, the lingering effects of that are that you have... the intelligent design movement who say things like, you can't find a traditional transitional form from one species to another. And it's a complete, it's misleading that the idea of that the species is such a very specific thing. Because it's not. Of course, specific and species come from the same root, I imagine, so. Yeah.
Yeah, there's that. There's he totally that. Wrote down thing about, he wrote down his poetics. He wrote down what makes good plays. That was pretty useful. I think people still use that.
Do they?
Yeah, cleavage.
Cleavage is, yeah, that's the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
We are, and going with your gut.
Yeah. That's pretty much Aristotle's poetics in a nutshell.
Awesome. I agree with this man now. Did he do anything, like, he's not the kind of guy where you can just go, cogito ergo sum. That's what he did.
Done. Yeah. No, because he did everything. That's like, the problem.
I'm blanking, but I want to say categorical imperative.
Yeah, categorical imperative. Kant.
There you go. Kant,
you're
yeah.
ostensibly done if you think the phrase categorical imperative explains anything, which it doesn't.
If you know what it means, then you're done. Of course, if you know what it means, you've read all of Kant's work.
Sorry.
Yeah. Nothing we can do.
That man's work is...
Nietzsche. God is dead. Übermensch. Done. And Aristotle, you just... you're not coming up with...
That's the problem. He did everything, and we don't get his good pithy stuff, because the historical problem with Aristotle, kind of the same way that, you know, if you try to pin down Socrates' historical problem, it's that you don't know what was Socrates and what was Plato.
Yeah.
So it's hard to, you know... say, this is Socrates' philosophy and be sure.
Yes.
The historical Aristotle problem is that the stuff we have of his writings was not like, this is, you know, the published and edited work of Aristotle's Metaphysics. It was basically like Aristotle's lecture notes from the Lyceum.
Yeah, but lecture notes are pretty good. Did he use PowerPoint?
They're not great.
Did he use PowerPoint for those? I mean, it's probably an old version, so it's probably hard to convert.
But it's all in, like, scroll format, though, so it was it's hard to process.
I know I have a lot of suggestions like this a lot of the time, but I do want to say, that's a book we could write right there, Dave. The PowerPoint presentations of Aristotle.
That is a book we could write.
I just think we could write.
Your suggestion is technically correct.
It's dead on. And I think that we could really get something out of that. You know what I mean? I think people want to read that. Or see it on the internet for free. Which, that's not making me any money, so F those people. All right, Dave, are you ready to take a little break?
Yeah, I think we're good to go. I think we're good to go.
I may have just killed that segment. And these things happen, so, you know, you shouldn't get... I'm just not going to get too upset about it. All right, well... We will be right back with more of episode 47 of I'm Trying to Think. To episode 47 of I'm Trying to Think. Dave.
Yeah.
Oscar fever. Do you have it?
No.
Me neither. But let's talk about them. Are you ready to talk about them?
I'm ready for... I mean, I've already seen, you know, rumblings around the internet. People talking about the Oscars as if they're a thing that matters or makes sense. I don't know. I've never really understood the Oscars.
I can't ever remember watching the Oscars in my life.
I feel like I have bits and pieces of it for some reason. Yeah, and that's ultimately why they exist, is because people watch them.
Yeah, and I feel
put some asses in front of TVs and sell ads for, you know, like everything on television.
You gotta have asses in the seats, Dave.
But just conceptually, it's always seems like it's just this awkward attempt to... essentially, turn something that is inherently, you know, that is not inherently competition, i.e., you know, making films, into competition, but the rules are made up by random people. Like, the rules aren't even made up by random people, like, because that would imply that there were rules. Like, that was me giving it a step too much credit. Because the rules for any competition are generally made up by random people. I mean, the rules for football were made up by random people. But then the two teams play by those rules which are known, and, you know, one team wins and one team loses. The Oscars, to me, is basically just like if football was decided by, like, 50 guys in a room somewhere were like, you know, took a vote, and that's who wins football. You know, that's what the Oscars are. It's people you don't know deciding arbitrary things.
To me, the Oscar nominations are like sitting in a Denny's and listening to a bunch of people at the next table talk about their favorite movies, and then using that as a basis for what movies are good.
Pretty much, except those people at a Denny's. In this case, they would be embarrassed to be at a Denny's.
Yeah, but they're no more qualified than anyone else. Anyways, let's make our Oscar picks, Dave. Are you ready?
Sure.
That's my.
This is good because these are going to be completely obsolete by the time
they happen. Anybody listens, it's great.
But wait,
but people already know if we're right or wrong.
Question to clarify:
ask.
Is this supposed to be the things we would like to win the Oscar, or things we think will win the Oscar? Like, are we trying to win a pool, or are we trying to have opinions?
What I've seen in Oscar picks usually is people pick who they think is going to win.
Okay, yeah, so we're trying to win the pool.
We're counterculture, Dave. So what we do, it's anybody's guess.
Okay, so we just make a pick. Basically, have a list, choose a thing from that list based on criteria mysterious.
No, you should have really good reasons and justify your picks, definitely. That makes it way more fun.
Okay, sweet. Let's do it. Let's make it happen. Yeah.
All right. First up, because this is the order they are on the actual Academy Awards website. Actor in a leading role. Javier Bardem. In Beautiful, which is spelled goofy because it's foreign.
Yes.
Jeff Bridges in True Grit. Jesse Eisenberg in The Social Network. Colin Firth in The King's Speech. Or James Franco in 127 Hours. Now, here's the unique thing about this category. Aside from Javier Bardem, I have seen the other four on Saturday Night Live. And that gives me a different perspective on people.
Uh-huh.
And it
decides, it's like how they do in sort of a forced comedy situation.
Decides whether I have respect for them or not. And I respect all those guys. Javier Bardem, on the other hand, was on Conan. Or not even on the other hand, on the same hand, possibly. Was on Conan and became one of his Oscar winner F-bombs. So Javier Bardem, Oscar winner, on Conan dropped the F-bomb, and then he gets a little statuette in a little corner of the
Okay, studio. So they're all pretty good on the late-night television scale.
I like them all for that reason. Okay, Jesse Eisenberg, too young. He's out. James Franco, also too young. Goodbye. Colin Firth, too firthy. Goodbye. Jeff Bridges is the dude. I pick Jeff Bridges as the winner because nobody can deny the dude. And you know all those people are secretly voting for him because he is the dude and they love the dude. So my pick is Jeff Bridges. Your pick, Dave.
I guess you could go with Bridges because, you know, he's got that dude-like power. And in True Grit, he's apparently, you know, constantly drunk. The Academy loves drunks.
In True Grit, he's also playing the role played by John Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Did
Wayne win an Oscar for that one?
Old, I don't know. Probably not.
I think he might have.
I have no idea.
I don't know. We're utterly unqualified to talk about this.
But go ahead.
But that's okay. In terms of who's gonna win?
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's Firthy, because King's Speech is... That's gonna win a lot of stuff, because there's costumes, there's Britishness.
A lot of Britishness.
I think that's going to win over the Academy voters because they are suckers for the British.
There's arguably more Britishness in The King's Speech than in any other movie ever. You could make a movie called Britain, the United Kingdom of England. And it would not be as British as the King's Speech.
Yep, and I think the Academy's going to find that hard to resist.
That's a good point. I'm going to at least give you, like, I'm going to say, that's my second choice. So that way I'm couching it, you know. All right, actor in a supporting role, because, again, men are more important, so they go first. Christian Bale in The Fighter. John Hawks in Winter's Bone. Okay, is that a porno? I've never heard of that guy, and that sounds like a porno.
No, you've definitely heard of that guy. He's, You're watching The Deadwood, aren't you?
I've, like, watched, like, 5 episodes.
Yeah, he's, Saul on Deadwood.
Oh, okay.
Also, have you seen Eastbound and Down?
No.
Because he's, totally,
Okay.
Danny McBride's brother.
Pornographer in Porno Bone. Jeremy Renner. Okay, if it was Reamer, he would also be a porn star. Renner in The Town. Mark Ruffalo in The Kids Are All Right. And Jeffrey Rush in The King's Speech. I picked Jeffrey Rush in The King's Speech because he's the only guy I know except for Christian Bale. And Christian Bale yells at people, so he's not winning anything ever.
I don't know. I think
nobody likes a yeller.
Christian Bale has a pretty good shot because he did the Hollywood thing for it, where he got stringy and weird and, like, basically he changed himself physically. The Academy loves when you change yourself physically, you know. So, you know, De Niro getting fat for Raging Bull, you know, Charlize Theron ugly-ing up for The Monster.
Christian Bale became a freaking anorexic for The Machinist, and he didn't win shit for that.
True, true. So he might still not get it. I'd say Mark Ruffalo, you know, I'm going to go with the Ruffalo, because I think Hollywood wants to give The Kids Are All Right some awards just to be like, you know, have a little public thing where they're being like, you know, thumbs up, lesbian moms. But they don't want to give it a major award because it's not British.
Okay. What? Thumbs up who now?
Lesbian moms. Because That's what The Kids Are All Right is about.
All right. I like Jeffrey Rush still. And Dave, you were correct. John Wayne won an Academy Award for his portrayal of Rooster Cogburn in True Grit, 1969.
Yes, that's the thing. I don't think they're going to give the Academy Award to a second rooster. How many Rooster Cogburns can win? I
think that would be awesome. 2 roosters. Come on. It's all rooster in here. All right. Actress in a leading role, Dave. Annette Bening in The Kids Are All Right. Nicole Kidman in Rabbit Hole. Jennifer Lawrence in Winter's Bone, which I really want to see now. Natalie Portman in Black Swan. Michelle Williams in Blue Valentine. Everybody knows it's Natalie Portman. Everybody loves her. They love her being evil with herself or whatever goofy psycho twist movie that was in that movie. And they like her in the crazy makeup. And she's banging the ballerina guy who was in the movie too, so.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's probably Portman's year.
All right, well, there's no disagreement there, so moving on. Actress in a supporting role. Amy Adams in The Fighter. Helena Bonham Carter in The King's Speech. Melissa Leo in The Fighter. Hailee Steinfeld in True Grit, and Jackie Weaver in Animal Kingdom. It goes to Hailee Steinfeld in True Grit because her name is Steinfeld, which sounds like Seinfeld, and people love Jerry Seinfeld.
I think it goes to her also because that was, apparently, I still haven't seen it because I stopped seeing most movies in the theaters.
I haven't seen any of these movies.
But
that's what I've heard she's really
good
at.
I've heard she's really good in it, and Hollywood likes giving newbies smaller awards. So I think it's going to give her that one. I think she's getting it. It's happening.
Okay, so then there's like animated feature film, art direction. Who cares about that shit?
Well, Toy Story wins that one because it's this year's Pixar movie.
Toy Story 3. I mean,
they win animated film. That's just how it happens.
How to Train Your Dragon was good, but I haven't seen Toy Story 3, but it's probably better. Cinematography, costume design, who cares? Directing, whatever. Well, I guess directing is important. Best director. We'll go through it. Black Swan, Darren Nofersponsky. The Fighter, David O. Russell. The King's Speech, Tom Hooper. The Social Network.
You've just decided that you can't pronounce Dave words now, Lynn right?
Flincher.
Because none of these are difficult things Drew to pronounce.
Grant, Joel Kahn and Ethan Coon. Nobody knows who directors are, Dave. Directors.
I feel like you've just started having, like,
I can't pronounce these people's
syllable
names.
By syllable basis of aphasia.
Ferners. Who wins Best Director?
So in this year, they're probably going to give it to Fincher on the whole basis of everyone liked The Social Network, but then a British movie came out, so they have to give that most of the awards, but they have to throw The Social Network a bone. A winner's bone, if you will.
All right. Form, who cares about this? Music, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Sound editing. Big one. Inception, Richard King. Toy Story 3, Tom Myers and Michael Silvers. Tron Legacy, Gwendolyn Yates, Whittle, and Addison Teague. True Grit, Skip Livesey and Craig Berkey. And Unstoppable, Mark P. Stokinger. While the train movie seems like the dead giveaway for sound editing, I say it goes to Gwendolyn Yates, Whittle, and Addison Teague for Tron Legacy and also having funny names.
Yeah, I think I actually agree with you. I was going to Yates and Teague because they've
Yates,
been...
Whittle, and Teague.
Yates, Whittle, and Teague, sorry. That sounds like a law firm and a sketch comedy sketch.
Oh, I would not go to Yates, Whittle, and Teague for my divorce proceedings. All right, so who's, your pick there is also Whittle and Teague.
Yeah, and the thing that I wonder about the Academy is... I don't know how many members there are. I don't know who exactly is voting, but I wonder how many of the Academy's members know a fucking thing about sound editing.
The sound editor members of the Academy.
So I feel like that's a category where I would guess that the majority of people voting on it don't really know what it means.
All right.
So I think that's
fun. The category with 10 nominees for absolutely no good reason. Black Swan, The Fighter, Inception, The Kids Are All Right, The King's Speech, 127 Hours, The Social Network, Toy Story 3, True Grit, Winter's Bone, Best Picture. Who wins it? I'm going to go Winter's Bone, because everybody likes some bone.
That would be an upset.
Yeah, it'd be a huge upset. There's no way it's winning.
No,
everybody knows the King's Speech is winning.
Yeah, because it's got British powers. Yeah.
I don't even watch these movies. I don't even follow the Academy. But every time I turn on a TV, somebody's telling me the King's Speech is going to win.
Yeah, I mean, Winner's Bone is about the Appalachian...
Bone, the winner, right?
Actually, it's about Appalachian Hill people dealing meth. So that's like anti-British. That's like the opposite of British.
In Britain, they don't have meth. Yes, they do.
I'm just saying, you know, the like Ozark people, like, that's the opposite of British in terms of the Academy Awards.
So there's no boning in Winter's Bone?
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. I cannot confirm, nor can I deny the presence of boning.
Do you know if it's rated R for adult situations and boning?
Nope. I got no idea.
So, if you bone a fish, that's bad, right? You want to debone a fish, right?
Yeah, if you bone a fish, that then there's mermaids, but which are mermaids are
that's
beautiful.
That's how mermaids come?
Yeah, you bone a fish.
Oh man! All right, so everybody knows
they're half fish and half person, aren't they?
They are, as far as I can tell.
Duh.
You know what the weird thing about a mermaid is? Let's talk about this.
No, wait. Please, I do not know the one weird thing about a mermaid.
Okay.
So please explain to me the single and only weird thing about a mermaid.
Think about this, Dave.
The rest of the things that you do not mention when you say this thing are completely normal things about mermaids.
Think about this, Dave. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. So a fish fin, is it perpendicular to the lateral fins or parallel to the lateral fins?
It's perpendicular.
It is. You are correct. A mermaid tail. Is it perpendicular to their arms, aka lateral fins, or is it parallel?
It is parallel, my friend.
That is weird. If it were a mammal, that makes sense. Whales, dolphins, manatees, parallel fins, tail fins. And they also have a vertical dorsal fin that is it's perpendicular to the tail fin. But mermaids, who are supposedly fish-people hybrids, have the unique feature of having fins that are parallel to their arms instead of perpendicular. Tail fins specifically. And that is weird. King's Speech wins it by a mile.
And that, I think, is our Oscar preview.
If the King's Speech were a mermaid film, it would win it by a fathom. It'd still win. It would also be the Mer-King Speech. Or like Neptune, King of the Seas Speech. Do you think Neptune has a stutter?
I'm not sure if he's a talker. He's got bubbles.
Stutter. Make a call. We're at war.
If he does have a stutter, he'd better overcome it quickly so he can lead Atlantis in a fight against the sea Nazis.
I hate sea Nazis. Dave, if a sea creature were going to be, if Nazis were among the sea creatures, what creature would be most likely to be the sea Nazi?
Probably, I don't know, because first instinct is to say shark, because they would look great in those uniforms.
Yeah, they would. They'd snappy.
But I don't know if that fits the shark behavior. I mean, you again, it's tempting because you're just like, well, sharks are mean and Nazis are bad.
Yeah.
So therefore, it works. But I don't know.
There's accidents.
Maybe it would be those the angler fish. That seems kind of fascistic to me.
Yeah, they're sneaky, too. Mm-hmm. Like, Goebbels would definitely be like an anglerfish.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, Rommel's not, you know. Well, Rommel's a desert fox. What's the fox equivalent underwater?
The ocean fox.
It really wouldn't matter, because he'd still be in the desert, and that's not going to work.
He's the ocean fox.
So he would definitely lose in that fight. Yeah.
Hold on, just to clarify. What fight?
Well, if he was fighting, there'd be a fight with him in the desert against, you know, what, I think MacArthur, maybe some Patton that was there fighting in the desert.
No, wasn't that mostly the British? I don't know. I feel like across North Africa, that was mostly the British.
I don't know who that was.
In the...
I'm blanking on, like, North Africa in World War II is my blind spot, if you will. It's like, I know they fought. I know Rommel was there. And they were in the desert.
There were the British, and there were some Americans also, but it was definitely the British first, because, you know, the British had stuff in North Africa.
If you're going to ask me what happened, I'm going to be like, wouldn't you rather hear about the Battle of the Bulge? You know, wouldn't you rather hear about Operation Market Garden? Because those are things I know about, unlike the desert. I don't like a thing about the desert, Dave. I'm not going to Burning Man. You think Rommel would go to Burning Man?
Probably. He was the desert fox.
Yeah, he's a desert fox. He'd love Burning Man. But fuck that. I'm not going to the desert. I'm not going to Burning Man. I'm not going to Burning Rommel. Or Rommel Man. Or any of that stuff.
Oh, man. Rommel Man. Burning up his fuse out there in the desert.
Alone. All right, Dave. Is there anything else you'd like to add to episode 47 before we sign off? Promising to come back, as always, for another episode of I'm Trying to Think.
I think we've got it covered.
Well then, from the lovely I'm Trying to Think Studios, this has been Chuck Warner, and that was Dave Stern, and we will be back later for episode 48. But for now, we leave you with some delicious oats. And also Daryl Hall.
Absolutely.
And if they're complaining about all that stuff, I have no patience for them.
Agreed.
No patience. Unfriend and unliking on Facebook, motherfuckers. You get the Hall & Oates, you'll like it.
Song always reminds me a little bit of the DuckTales theme.
Woo!
Exactly. Exactly.